Hello and welcome to Tech Shop from Parents Own, the podcast that looks at the impact of digital technologies on family life for parents, teachers, professionals and policymakers with me, Vicky Shotbolt and Geraldine Bedell. This week, we got a chance to ask two Ofcom executives a couple of questions that have been bothering us about how regulation of online harms will work in practice. Anna Sophie Harling and Caroline Kaysen talked to us about some of the research that Ofcom has been carrying out as it gears up for its role as a regulator once the Online Safety Bill has passed. We discuss parents and children's attitudes to age assurance, which we know from our own research that parents want, yet they also want to have a hand in those decisions because they know their children best. Can technologies provide flexibility to parents and still protect the vulnerable?
We also discuss Ofcom's regulation of video sharing platforms. Ofcom began having oversight of these a year ago, and the way the systems work tells us quite a lot about what life might look like once the Online Safety Bill becomes law. For anyone interested in delving further into Ofcom's position on these issues, there's an Ofcom blog, How Old Is Your Child Online? The Risks of Children Using False Ages on Social Media. You can find the link in our show notes.
Hi, Geraldine.
Hi, it's very miserable here. The November weather has really kicked in and I seem to be surrounded by puddles and I've got very cold feet.
So all in all, a fantastic start to the week. Actually, I'll tell you how it is in Kent. I am knee deep in Christmas shopping, I'm sorry to say, and I'm trying to do it online, but I've already made my first mistake, which is double ordering something and trying to figure out what on earth to do with the extra one.
Well, that's embarrassingly early. You're always so organised. You put the rest of us to shame. I think I'll probably start about a week before Christmas, when I'll be very grateful to be able to order everything online because there won't be anything left in the shops by then.
I do feel as though Christmas is one of those times when I think, gosh, how did we even navigate this before we had digital? And the online world can be really fantastic sometimes when I don't have to go out in the rain and actually go to a shop.
Yeah, I remember that struggling home from shops with armfuls of bags and not having been able to remember what you ordered. And now you can just have a spreadsheet and click.
I know.
So it's great. So on that happy note, let's bring in our guests. We have two today. We're delighted to welcome from Ofcom, Caroline Kaysen and Anna Sophie Harling, who I think is usually known by her initials as Ash. Is that right?
Yes. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you both on TechShock because you're at the centre of so many of the things that we and parents think about. So Ofcom will be responsible for implementing online safety laws when we get them, assuming that we get them. We're hoping that we'll get them. And in preparation, you've been carrying out a wide range of really interesting research to understand the landscape and the realities of what you're going to have to regulate. And we want to talk to you today about a couple of pieces of research that you've published recently. And Caroline, we're going to talk to you about age assurance technologies and parents' sometimes contradictory attitudes to them. But first, I want to come to you, Ash, because we want to talk about video sharing platforms, which are usually abbreviated to VSPs. And although we are still waiting for the Online Safety Bill to become law, Ofcom already has oversight of VSPs. And recently you published a report arguing that they're not doing enough to protect children from pornography. So I wondered if you could explain a bit about how many companies we're talking about here and what kinds of content you're concerned about.
Yeah, sure. I do have to say in the beginning I was excited because I thought you might have brought me on to talk about my Christmas plans, but we can definitely talk about VSPs. Exactly. Over the last year or so, we've had the opportunity to start practicing a bit of online safety regulation with a group of, I think it's now 19 video sharing platforms that include a couple of big names that most parents will have heard of. So that includes Twitter, Snap, OnlyFans, and also a live streaming site called Twitch, which is used by a lot of gamers. And we've had the opportunity to get information from these platforms through formal information gathering powers, which is really exciting, and ask them exactly what measures they have in place to protect users and especially children from harm online, how they think about protection of users, not just sort of on the policy level, but also at the product design level, what governance systems they have in place, and also what they're doing with tools like parental controls and media literacy functions. So all very relevant to parents and ensuring that they're aware of how their children are using the tools and online apps that they're using and are doing so in a way that is responsible and ultimately helps protect them from harm.
That must have been such a fascinating kind of first foray into that area of regulation. And I'm intrigued around what you found so far. I think these platforms claim to verify users' age, but in reality, actually, they rely really heavily on users just telling them the truth. And even on platforms like Twitter, that we know is a platform that has an awful lot of pornography on it. So I wonder what you think to that notion that relying on self-declaration is okay, because it's not the same thing as age assurance at all, is it?
No, not at all. So I think I agree with you completely. Part of the reason why I joined Ofcom was because of our formal information gathering powers, because you know, we've relied for too long on platforms telling the world on how they're keeping users safe and how they're doing a really great job. And they publish transparency reports that paint a really great picture. But I think as every social media user and parent knows, there's a really big gap between what platforms say they're doing online and what the actual user experience is and the kinds of things that we're seeing online that we probably shouldn't be. And so one of the great things that Ofcom can do now is to set out questions that platforms have to answer honestly and in full. And this is one of the things we did in our first year. And what we did find is detailed information about the way that each platform is going about determining the age of their users. And as you've said, for most social media companies and for these VSPs that we're currently regulating, the only thing that's required is for a child or an adult to essentially put in what we call a self-declared date of birth. And as Caroline will go into later, we also found that a huge number of children find it very easy to just, you know, put in a date of birth that is much higher. They can just sort of scroll through the years and find a year that they assume is going to be above the age of 13 or 18, depending on what the requirement is, and then make an account. And what we've shown is that especially for adult platforms that host a lot of pornography, this simply isn't good enough and that platforms aren't doing enough to protect children from those potentially harmful types of content online.
Different platforms have, though, responded in different ways, haven't they? And OnlyFans is a platform that we're really interested in because our sister organisation, Voicebox, did some research on OnlyFans and found some, what seemed to me at least, quite troubling phenomena. And they have responded to your oversight by bringing in age verification with tools from Yoti and Ondato. And I wondered, so those are sort of third-party verifications that sit outside the organisation, presumably. I wondered how that works and whether, in your view, it's been successful.
So with regards to OnlyFans trialing and then ultimately implementing third-party age verification tools, the way that that typically works is that new UK users creating an account can essentially decide what kind of age verification they'd like to use. So Yoti works by taking and then ultimately deleting a picture of someone's face, but it scans it and then does an age estimation. If users don't want to take a selfie, they can go through the other methods and upload a form of ID. So there are different types of verification available depending on essentially the comfort or the sort of the risk appetite of the user. And Caroline will go into that. So we do a lot of research on the kinds of age verification that users are more comfortable with and whether parents and users even want age verification, which is quite interesting. With regards to whether the implementation has been successful, what we said in our report is that we've spent the first year doing a lot of information gathering to understand exactly what measures platforms have in place, and we'll then spend the next year of regulation, so year two, trying to investigate exactly how well these measures are working and also really getting platforms to think more carefully about regulation as more than just a tick box exercise. The onus is on the platforms to have to demonstrate to Ofcom exactly how they're determining how effective their measures are, and for us to be able to look in and say, we either agree with that or we don't think this is effective enough. So one of the really exciting things we're doing now is mapping out and scoping our year two plan of work for VSPs to figure out what are the metrics we need to collect, what's the information we need to collect to determine, is this age verification method actually working well?
This may sound like a really silly question, so forgive me if it is, but how do you make judgments slightly upstream of that? So I'm back to my thoughts on porn and Twitter, which Twitter, as people will know, has got an age rating of 13, which for a platform that is so awash with pornography, it seems completely the wrong age. What do you do about that? Because it seems to me that verifying that somebody's over the age of 18, but then allowing them into an environment that is full of porn is fundamentally problematic. So do you have any powers to go back to the platforms and say, actually, you need to look at a more fundamental level about your platform, at your platform, not just the age verification?
Yeah, absolutely. So the important thing to note about both VSP regulation as well as online safety regulation is that it's what we call systems and processes based. So it's not that we go on and we try to find harmful content and then we go back to the platform and say, you have to take this down. That's not it at all. What we want to do is work essentially with platforms over time to ensure that they have robust systems in place to detect, remove illegal content, and then to essentially deliver an age-appropriate experience to users across the board. And so the VSP regime is interesting because we regulate both services that are aimed at 13 and above, and also services that are adult platforms, i.e. they have a minimum age requirement of 18. And even within platforms like TikTok that have a minimum age requirement of 13, but are now bringing in new rules around certain functionalities that are more likely to host adult content like live streaming, what we're seeing is that the platforms are going to have to really think carefully about where are the different risky areas of the platform and how do those pose different risks to users of different areas. So one of the findings of our report, actually, which is really interesting, is that TikTok is one of the only platforms that actually treats users between the ages of 13 and 18 differently, depending on their exact age. So most platforms say you're either under the age of 18 or you're over 18, and you're going to get a different experience based on that. TikTok actually says if you're 13 to 14, 15 to 16, and 17 to 18, you'll be getting slightly different experiences. And so that's more developed than we've seen with some other platforms that are just treating 13-year-olds and 17-year-olds similarly, which I think any parent would say is probably not the case. So we are seeing some age gradations across platforms already, and will be interesting to work with TikTok and others to see exactly how, for example, content is going to be classified differently according to those pretty granular age differences.
That's really interesting, and I agree. And actually, it's something that our research picks up on, that parents don't, you know, that parents have a much more nuanced approach to thinking about when their child is the right age for doing different sorts of things. So that TikTok approach seems to make sense. Although Ofcom, am I right in saying that Ofcom doesn't regulate TikTok because TikTok's not based in the UK? It's a Chinese company. So I'm assuming that you haven't got the same visibility into what goes on inside TikTok as you might have to OnlyFans, which is UK based.
So surprisingly, actually, TikTok is one of the 19 VSPs that we regulate. They've self-notified as being registered and headquartered in the UK for regulatory purposes, which means that we have the same relationship with TikTok as we do with OnlyFans. We can issue formal information requests. We have pretty extensive supervisory engagement with them. We meet with them regularly. And when there are certain incidents that happen online, we're able to reach out to them and require a meeting or certain details or information along those lines. So while it is ultimately owned by a Chinese parent company, ByteDance, we do have the same working relationship with them as we do with a company like OnlyFans. I think the same thing will ultimately be true under the online safety bill with companies that are headquartered, as we know, in Silicon Valley or in the US. And one of the big questions has been, how is Ofcom as a UK regulator going to affect meaningful change to companies that are largely based overseas? And that's one of the exciting things that we've been able to see now is that companies like TikTok or Snap as well, which is regulated under VSP, which is based in the US, they are actually responding to regulation. They're engaging seriously with us and they're trying to prove to us that they're taking the safety of their users as seriously in the UK as they would anywhere else in the world.
I think that's really reassuring to hear, actually, and I'm sure parents would be really reassured by that because I think the assumption is that companies would only comply if they're brought dragging and screaming. But I have one more question before Geraldine takes us on to a next, into a slightly different direction. But one of the things that we found with OnlyFans, VoiceBox found with OnlyFans when they did their research into it, was that there was a certain amount of grooming that went on feeder platforms, if you will. So platforms where people were saying, I can't wait to be 18 so that I can set up my OnlyFans account, and older people encouraging younger people to go into that environment and start to use it as a money, an income generator. And that troubles us too. It's that wider ecosystem that sits around some of these video sharing platforms that are creating a climate that encourages behaviour to aspire to that might not be the sort of behaviour that you would want a younger child to aspire to. Do you look at that wider ecosystem at all, or are you only able to focus specifically on the video sharing platforms?
Yeah, that's a really good point. A couple of things on that. So as a regulator, Ofcom is really aware of and engages really seriously with, in general, the wider ecosystem. So we don't just put our blinders on and engage simply with the platforms we regulate. And an example of this actually is earlier this year, there was a really tragic live streaming of a shooting in Buffalo, New York, in the US that was live streamed on one of the platforms we regulate, Twitch. And we ended up kicking off a huge project to engage with the wider ecosystem about what can live streaming platforms, but also other platforms and third-party organizations do to help minimize the risk and fallout of live stream terror attacks, which we've seen regularly over the last couple of years. And one of the main findings there was it's not enough for the live streaming platforms to simply remove the live stream. It's the responsibility lies with the wider ecosystem with many other platforms in helping to minimize the distribution of that footage, but also on smaller platforms to ensure that the radicalization of those users doesn't happen in the first place. So there are many different actors that bear some sort of responsibility and can meaningfully also affect change in positive ways. And the responsibility almost rarely sits with one company. More broadly, with regards to OnlyFans, I think it's worth noting that our regulatory powers under the VSP legislation, which is a holdover from a European directive that came in just shortly before Brexit, it is much more limited than the future powers under the Online Safety Bill will be. So, of course, we can look at far fewer platforms, but also the kinds of harms that we're able to look into and protect users from a legal basis, are narrower than under the Online Safety Bill. And they unfortunately don't extend to grooming. So we can look into it and we can ask OnlyFans about it, but we are looking forward to our online safety powers to be able to give us more of a foothold to engage meaningfully on topics like grooming or on disinformation, which is also, for example, out of scope of the VSP legislation. So it's definitely something we're looking into, and we've spoken to a couple of platforms about this and sort of this wider ecosystem question. But I do think it is worth noting that the importance of the Online Safety Bill coming into effect is that it will give Ofcom much more robust bandwidth and power to be able to look at a wider range of platforms and stakeholders, including some of the smaller ones, some of the fringe ones you might have been thinking about, but also be able to protect users from a wider range of harms using a wider range of measures.
That's absolutely fascinating. And it's very encouraging, really, I think, because what we're looking at here is nothing if not a highly complex system. And it's heartening that you think that once we get the online safety bill legislation through, you will have much greater powers to look at that holistically. It's also very encouraging, I think, that TikTok registered for regulatory purposes in the UK, and that seems to bode very well as well for the online safety bill. And I wonder if you have any thoughts about why that is. That is presumably because they see it's in their interests in the long term. But some of the larger companies, not only TikTok, but also Snapchat and Vimeo, you say, have taken measures to tighten up their systems to keep pornographic content away from children. That's one of the things that you report. And you mentioned what TikTok has done, and I wondered if what Snapchat and Vimeo have done is exactly the same thing or slightly different, because it seems to me that the devil is going to be in the detail when it comes to regulation. It's not going to work unless it is quite nuanced and sensitive. If it's blanket, it's going to upset an awful lot of people. So I just wondered what sort of measures they've taken and how encouraged you feel about those.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's probably worth clarifying that Vimeo and Snap and TikTok didn't take measures to protect children from pornography. The part of the VSP report that focused on pornography was really looking at the adult platform. So obviously we saw really big, meaningful change from OnlyFans, and we'll be delving into that over the next year. But the other thing that the report did was call out some of the smaller adult platforms that absolutely don't have robust age verification systems in place, and put them on essentially a 12-month notice to put a roadmap in place to have robust age verification. And that's another big thing we'll be working on over the next 12 months. With regards to the measures that some of the social media firms like TikTok and Snap or even Vimeo have put in place under VSP, that's been, for example, Snap bringing in what they've called a family center. So for the first time having more robust parental controls. And I think it's important to say that having the parental controls in place doesn't mean anything if parents don't actually use them. So it's going to be really important as well for Snap to make a really good faith attempt to get parents aware of the fact that those tools exist and engage with them meaningfully on those measures. Vimeo brought in measures to essentially ensure that any mature content is not available to the general public and that you have to make an account to be able to find and look for that type of content, whereas in the past it's just been freely available on a homepage without a login. And what we saw from TikTok was interesting as well. So they've brought in over the last couple of months that content classification based on ages that I spoke about. But they've also made some bigger changes to the way that they operate. So they formed something called an Online Safety Oversight Committee, which they said was in response to UK and European legislation, which is comprised of some fairly senior people. And those groups, that group essentially will be making decisions about the measures that platforms have in place to protect users from harm. We've seen steps taken by TikTok to carry out what we call risk assessments, i.e. proactively thinking about when we release new products, how might they pose risks to certain users and to children of different age groups. So I think this is particularly heartening because what we ultimately want to see, and this again goes beyond just a tick box exercise, is a fundamental shift in the way that platforms are prioritizing user safety. And when we saw data privacy regulation come in, so around the GDPR, companies around the world, just overnight seemingly, although in reality, of course, it took several months, they brought in data protection officers. They started doing data protection impact assessments every time they shipped or changed any new product. And we really want to see the same thing happen really with online safety, is that online safety and user safety and child safety isn't something that's just relegated to an outer policy team or a trust and safety team, but it's something that's really embedded in the way that platforms properly think about and design their products. So as you say, it's not just a Band-Aid on top of the wound. It's fundamentally thinking, how do we actually create products that create positive and beneficial experiences, especially for children, and not just how do we create chaos and then try to clean up the mess afterwards.
Thank you for that important clarification. And it does seem that the dial is moving slowly in the direction of safety, which is really encouraging. But not all companies are going to comply or comply instantly. Some are going to test you, and you have opened a formal investigation into one VSP, Tapnet Limited, for not complying with your request for information. And I wondered if you could tell us a bit about why you did that and where that kind of got you to.
Yeah, absolutely. So Tapnet's an interesting one. They own an adult platform called RevealMe, which is based in the UK. And the reason that we opened an investigation was because over a period of weeks, they failed to respond or even engage with us in response to our formal information gathering powers. And the reason why enforcement is really important here is because most of the things that we ultimately want platforms to do over the long term, i.e. implementing age verification or more robust measures, is not something necessarily that will come about through enforcement. I.e., if we go to a platform and say, you know, we're a bit concerned about this measure, they'll come back to us, they'll sit down with us, and we can, through the course of our established relationships with them, encourage them to change the measures they have in place. And we're already seeing this happen. So the changes that platforms have in place and have made in response to regulation, like OnlyFans bringing in age verification, happened because the platform wanted to better comply with the regime. And we didn't have to enforce in that case. That was in response to months of engagement with Ofcom. The issue with platforms not responding to information gathering powers is that those powers are so central to our regime that we need to send the signal to platforms that if they fail to engage with us whatsoever or are unwilling to provide the information that we request, that's a fundamental failure of the way that the regulatory relationship is meant to work. If we can't get the information that we need, that means that the platform ultimately is not really respecting the regulator in its role and is fundamentally not complying with what's expected of it. And so it's really important for us to demonstrate from the outset that we're not afraid to use our enforcement powers when we feel it's necessary. And that if a platform is not going to engage with us or comply with a requirement that is set in law, like an information request, then we will act very quickly. Otherwise, we end up risking undermining every information request that we send if platforms think that they can get away with not responding.
That makes complete sense. I think, I guess at this early stage, it's super important to send out a message that it's better to cooperate, easier in the long term to cooperate than not, and that you're not just passively waiting for them to fill in another piece of paperwork. Take us back to the last attempt that the UK had at age verification of pornography. Which was due to come into force 2019. The British Board of Film Classification were due to be the regulator at that stage, and it was all halted. And there was a really strong assumption that people would object to verifying their age, and that was one of the reasons that we were given for the regime not actually coming into force. But I don't think you found that resistance, did you? Do you think that it's a case of people saying one thing, you know, they've got nothing to hide, they're not worried about age verifying, while secretly thinking another?
Yeah, I think, so obviously we've done research on this around parents' attitudes towards age verification and users' attitudes towards age verification. And I think, you know, there's still some resistance, but fundamentally the internet and attitudes towards the internet have shifted over the last couple of years. And I think it's probably not unlike when cars were produced with seatbelts and people just didn't want to wear seatbelts. But then rules came into place and said, actually, you all have to wear seatbelts. And overnight, I think use of seatbelts went from like 15% to 80%. It's something that is annoying and people didn't want to have to wear whenever they got into a car. But now it's almost second nature to us. And we all understand that it makes, you know, a driving experience about a million times safer. So I think, as with any new product and any industry that's only beginning to be regulated, there are going to be teething problems when you have people who are used to just using it without any measures in place or any having to give too much of themselves up in order to have sort of a frictionless experience. But the reason why regulation is coming in is ultimately because we're starting to understand that the trade-offs just aren't necessarily worth it, that having people of all ages be able to access any part of the internet is simply not safe, and that while it can be a bit frustrating and that there's going to be an extra step in place, people are going to have to essentially prove that they're a certain age in order to view certain types of content online in the same way that you'd have to do in a store to buy cigarettes or alcohol or an adult magazine.
Thank you so much for all that, Ash. I wondered if we could move on to Caroline now, turn to you. Ofcom carried out another piece of research in the summer that suggested that on social media, large numbers of children are bypassing age assurance measures. And obviously, this plays into what we've just been talking about. So I wondered if you could tell me a bit about what you found.
So various things we found in this research, to be honest. It's quite a lot of findings that, you know, we just couldn't cover everything here. But yeah, children are definitely finding it really quite easy to bypass these age verification measures. And that's usually when it comes to the likes of self-declaration. So if they have to say what their age is, you know, so many of them are actually putting in a false date of birth and easily doing it, because they want to access these platforms, you know, they want to access the features, and they understand if they put in their real age, they're just not going to be able to access that. So some of the children in our study were quite open about this and said that they would always put, for example, the year 2000 as their date of birth, because it was one that was easy to remember. So they'd put their own birth date, but then they'd put the year 2000. And some of them were putting their parents' date of birth in, for example. And sometimes that's with their parents' knowledge. There were two teenage boys, for example. One had an online age of 45 and the other one had an online age of 50. So, you know, they were definitely classed as adults online.
I think that's so interesting. I'm sorry, I'm chuckling away because we find that with our research with families, parents say they want age assurance tools and they do feel that social media platforms ought to know the age of their users. But in practice, they do collaborate with their children to get around them. And I guess one of the reasons that with those self-declaration tools, those are the ones that children most routinely get around and put fake ages in, it's because those are the most common tools. I wonder when we get more advanced tools on the market and in common use, whether parents will do the same thing and they'll collaborate with their children to get around those tools as well. Do you have a sense of that yet? Or do you think that's going to be something we find out when age verification becomes more common?
Well, the parents in the research did tell us that they did agree that age assurance is needed. You know, they agree that there are things online that their children shouldn't be seeing, but it kind of sits in a bit of tension with them, because they recognise the children need to be protected from things that aren't age appropriate for them. But, you know, they have their own views of their child. You know, they're their expert on their own child. And so they'll know what their child can cope with, if you like. So, you know, they might think, you know, they've got a 10-year-old boy, for example, but he's, you know, he's really mature. And he's used to watching age 15 films, and, you know, they think that social media is the same kind of thing. And so they'll let that boy have a social media account. But actually, he's 10. And depending on what age the parent puts in and helps them create an account, depends on kind of what kind of content he will see. Because if you put in an older age of, say you're 16, that's the age that many platforms open up certain features, like direct messaging, and it's private. So that 10-year-old child could have a stranger contacting them directly without the parents knowing about it. And then if they put in an older age of, say, 18, then they're open to adult content being, you know, freely served on their social media feeds, because they are classed as an 18-year-old in that account.
I think this points up a really interesting aspect of age assurance tools, which is whether they can be sophisticated and nuanced enough really to meet the needs of users. Because crucially, it seems to me that what you're saying is it depends what it is online. I think that nobody wants their child to be viewing pornography, but there are aspects of social media that are really useful, and they might be useful for an 11-year-old or a 12-year-old as well as for a 13-year-old. Your life doesn't completely change at the age of 13. And, you know, some 11-year-olds are more mature than some 13-year-olds. So it's not, you know, it's a very ambiguous and difficult thing to legislate for. So I suppose the question really is, do you think those tools are going to become sophisticated enough to enable users to buy into them with confidence that they're not being kind of shut out of things that they really want to access and that their parents want them to access?
I think it aligns to what Ash said earlier about the seatbelts and being made to actually wear a seatbelt. You know, there's an element of effort in having to kind of like this, whether it's self-declare or to provide some kind of like a hard identifier, like a passport, you know, to prove who you are. And parents really reflected on that, you know, sometimes it's just such an effort. You've got, you know, I've got teenage stepchildren and my own phone will keep popping up because I've put on some kind of family setting that, you know, can he access this game and can he purchase this? And it's that, you know, like you're being bothered by all these pop-ups asking you for stuff. And you can see why parents might want to say, oh, I don't want to have to deal with the hassle of that. I will actually just give them an older age so they can deal with it. And one of the parents actually said to us that they thought unless it became legal, a bit like with the car seat scenario, then parents probably won't do it. You know, it is a lot of effort. And the thing is that if we're not aware of all the things that are online that might be harmful to our children, then we're not going to maybe enforce those measures because, you know, if you don't know about it, it's kind of ignorance is bliss, isn't it?
It is, I think, to some extent. And I also think I find those road analogies troubling. I completely take your point about the seatbelts, but they're kind of easy, aren't they, the seatbelt one, because typically you might have one or in some instances two family cars that everybody shares and the police are out on the roads enforcing people making sure that they are wearing seatbelts. But if you think about the digital world, it is like the world. It's probably, I guess it's bigger actually than the world as it is physically. And it's incredibly complex with multiple different players, some of whom are going to offer sites that don't facilitate age verification or age assurance because they don't care and they go rogue. We know that there are sites that do that already. There are virtual private networks that you can use so that you can mask where you are in the world and how old you are and who you are. There are shared ID. There are shared devices. There are fake IDs. There are multiple different strands of complexity when we're thinking about the online world. So it's, I don't think it is going to be like telling the world that you've got to put a seatbelt on. I think it's going to take a lot of convincing to persuade parents and young people that actually there's a better way to interact with the digital world, and that involves telling it how old you are. Do you think parents are approaching the point where they're aware enough of the risks and the downsides to be able to do that effectively and to balance the opportunity loss that we might all experience?
I do. I think, you know, children, like you say, there's that kind of offline and online world, and everything is online now almost. And, you know, we are living in this online world, and parents need to recognise that. They need to recognise that children don't see it as an online, offline divide. You know, online is their world. I once actually had a friend, and her daughter, who wasn't quite a teenager, was sitting next to me on the sofa, and she was completely engrossed in her phone. And I kind of jokingly said to her, why don't you put that down and join me in the real world? And she looked at me like I was absolutely nuts and said, no, this is my world. And that's kind of when I realised, okay, yeah, this is important. This is, you know, this is children's reality. And parents need to realise, and I, you know, I'm a parent, I totally recognise this, and I recognise this struggle that there's parenting in the offline world with the car seats and, you know, don't cross the road without looking first. And there's parenting in the digital world. And that's something that we're still learning, because a lot of us weren't born in a digital world. And so we are learning as we go along. And we have to make that our norm. We have to become digital parents as well, just make it our norm. And I think a lot of it will be, you know, how much trust they have in the platforms as well, because there's a lot of concern around data privacy, you know, being able to share your ID online to prove who you are. you know, parents will generally, and children will trust a government website, for example, to provide that ID because it's a secure government website, but they might not be as comfortable doing that with a social media site. So it's gaining that trust with who they're providing their ID to as well, and recognising that in doing so, they are protecting their children, because at the end of the day, that is our job. It's to protect our children.
That's right. And parents know their children best, but they're also under pressure to let their children be on social media. So how do you think parents should approach this? Are there some basic principles to bear in mind? I was very struck, actually, by the point that you made that the problem may not be when a child is 9 and pretending to be 13, because actually a lot of social media companies are restricting content to under 16s. But the problem might be when they're 13 or 14 and the platforms think they're adults and start serving them up adult content. So how do you think parents should think about it?
Well, exactly. We use this kind of analogy in our research publication. You know, it's a very simple way of looking at it, that you say you have a 10-year-old boy and you think he's mature enough, like I said earlier, to have their own social media account. And so you give him this account that says he's 13. And then if you think about it, in 5 years' time, your little 10-year-old will become 15. And so he is old enough to be on that account. But if you've given him an online age that's older than he is, his online age will have also aged in that time. So he'll actually be 18. So it's having that awareness of, even though giving them an account now that makes them appear older might seem okay because, you know, they're only being served content that is for 13-year-olds, it's further down the line how it's going to affect them and the impact that can be. Because we saw that in a lot of our children in our research, how they'd seen stuff when they were younger. And it was actually a really, really key finding that sometimes children have seen really, really shocking content, you know, stuff that you wouldn't want to even talk about. And it's that one-off shocking content you think, God, that's really going to affect them. And it did shock them, but generally are quite resilient and they'll move on. But actually what we found is if they were continually seeing like a kind of a drip drip of content that might appear less harmful, but is actually this regular feed of it, so they're almost passively consuming it, that then impacted them later on down the line. One of our participants, she had mental health issues and she struggled with her self-confidence. And she was looking at content online that was all about kind of how to look good, how to have that slim figure, how to fit into, you know, a certain type of dress. And so she just was looking for content to help her do that. But that then leaded into more severe type of content, kind of the pro-anorexia communities, that kind of stuff. And because that slowly became more and more in her feeds, that's what she was getting used to. And as she's gotten older, she can now look back and reflect that actually it really impacted her. It really impacted the way that she sees herself, how she sees those communities, and how she sees the online world in general. So there is that awareness of parents to realise what is going on online that we might not be aware of, but by giving them that older age, you know, you need to really take into consideration.
I think that's such a good point. We talk to parents all the time who will say things like, I moved out of the town because I want my child to have more space to play, or I needed a garden, or I want them to be able to do this, that and the other thing. And we'll say, you know, you should think about digital spaces in that same way. The environment that your child is growing up in online will be having an impact, a long-term impact, and you want to make it as positive a one as you possibly can. And I'm taking away from this conversation that we are making progress. It does feel as though we are moving in the right direction, regulation starting to have some teeth. And that's all incredibly positive, I think, because as an organisation that's been around for a very long time, passing on some of these messages to parents, it sometimes felt as though we're trying to turn the tide with a teaspoon. And it does feel as though perhaps we're starting to move forward. But I have to ask you, the online safety bill, it's been in progress for about 5 years now, I think. It was due to go into Parliament again in November, and it looks as though it's going to be delayed again. Are you optimistic? Is Ofcom actually going to be the regulator of the online safety bill? Are we actually going to have the online safety bill reach the statute books? Or is that a question that you can't answer?
We are confident that the bill is going to go ahead, maybe not in its original form, but we're confident that we will be the online safety regulator, and we are preparing, as we were, you know, 6 months ago, to get ready for royal assent, the passage of the bill, and for our first phase one consultation next year. So we're operating under the assumption that it's all full steam ahead.
That's very good news. I'm glad you are. Thank you both so much. That was completely fascinating. It does feel as though we're groping in the dark with all this regulatory stuff. The online safety bill is very top line. It's very opaque. It's baroque. It's difficult to understand. And it's quite hard to understand what it will be like when Ofcom is up and running, doing its job to the fullest extent. And thank you so much for explaining how that will work. I personally feel very encouraged. As Vicky said, it feels like we're making progress, and there's lots and lots more progress to be made. So thank you so much for coming on and talking to us.
Thanks for having us on. It's been great.
It's been great. Thank you so much.
I thought that was really interesting, and I thought it was really encouraging that platforms have elected to come within the scope of regulation, even though they're not necessarily UK-based.
I thought that was really encouraging, actually, because one of my assumptions had always been that it would be really difficult to get platforms to step forward and cooperate, I guess, with the incoming regulation. But it seems that that's not necessarily the case. So perhaps we can take away some optimism from that. I also thought it was really interesting what they were saying about children putting in inaccurate ages, with parents' knowledge and sometimes support, but then not thinking about the consequences further down the track when they actually turn 18 and or their age is suddenly showing them to be much older than they actually are.
No, I thought that was a very good point, which you don't necessarily think about at the time, because it's fine to for your child. You might decide it's fine for your child to be on social media, but you don't necessarily want them to be accessing adult content in 3 or 4 years' time. So I thought that was very interesting. And it did make me think yet again that there's a lot still to be learned about the sensitivity and sophistication of the tools, and whether they'll be flexible enough for parents to use them with confidence and a sense that they have kind of autonomy and an agency in what their children are doing.
I'm repeating myself now, but I do worry about those analogies to things like seatbelts. Although I completely understand the point that once you bring in regulation, people do start to comply and they get used to it and all of that good stuff. But the online world is so much more complicated than that, that I just wonder whether we are able to deal with some of that complexity, I guess.
Yes, yes. Well, I think that's exactly it. And but it does, on the other hand, seem as though, as you say, the platforms recognise the importance of safety, particularly where children are concerned. And there is a sense that they are sort of slowly working their way towards compliance with a tighter safety regime. So it'll be fascinating to see what happens. And I thought it was great to talk to Ash and Caroline, because regulation can feel so abstract and sort of abstruse. And it's great to talk to people who are actually thinking about the nitty-gritty of the issues and how they'll work out when they actually have to make something happen.
Yeah, and doing it in such a thoughtful way and with such excellent research, which we've always been fans of Ofcom research, but really great to talk to two of the people who are involved in doing it. So I came away quite optimistic after that one.
I did too. And another plug for their blog, if anybody's interested in looking further at the very interesting research, a good place to start is that blog, and the link is in the show notes.
You've been listening to Tech Shock from Parents Own with Vicky Shotbolt and Geraldine Bedell. We hope you'll sign up for regular episodes wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to give us a rating, preferably a good one, so other people can be helped to find us.